Welcome to the Seagull Eagle podcast. Two neighbours, two very different football loyalties. I'm Andy, lifelong Crystal Palace fan, and he's Neil, Brighton through and through. Seagulls and eagles, natural enemies on the pitch, but not over the garden fence. Each week, we'll bring you match reviews, fan stories, trivia, transfer talk, and a few friendly digs at each other, all in good spirits though. But it's not just Palace and Brighton, we'll be giving our takes on the rest of the Premier League too. So whether you're red and blue, or blue and white, love your team, or just love a good football chat, you're in the right place. This is Seagull Eagle. Wow, Neil, back again for week two. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, I've had a really good week. It's a great week to be alive, Andy. You know, we made a brave draw with the former Premier League champions, you know, while Palace lost to a lowly middle table team, you know, so...
Two strong penalties in your game, to be fair. Yeah, thanks to VAR. Wow. Well, look, I think, you know, it's been a good week for me, actually, as well. Not only have we launched the podcast, we've come back for more. And actually, people have actually listened to it, which is wonderful.
Who'd have thought?
I know. Isn't it wonderful? Also, another big thing this week is I got my Wembley tickets.
Oh, yeah. I'm so pleased for you.
Yeah, well, I thought you might be. I've been really excited about this. And I think it was Thursday they went on sale. I was there. I was number 2,000 in the queue. And we managed to get our tickets. It's going to be my first time, actually, at the new Wembley, believe it or not. Because I used to obviously work abroad and stuff. And I missed all of the previous times that you could count on two fingers that we went there before. It's going to be my first Wembley trip at the new Wembley, and we're really, really looking forward to it, going with the boys. So have you got your tickets, Neil?
I decided not to bother this year. We're bored of Wembley now. We've done it a few times, so I thought, you know, give someone else a go.
Brilliant. Well, is now a good time to have a chat about what happened this weekend? Because I'm a little bit less smug, as you've already alluded to, than I was this time last week.
Yeah. Let's talk about the two games. Let's do it chronologically, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
Manchester City, they took on the Eagles this week at the Etihad. Your boys started pretty well.
Oh, they did. And the lineups were pretty much as expected. Richards in for Gahey, Lerma playing on the left of a back three. Kamada started after a strong performance against Brighton. We were set up in the normal 3-4-2-1 formation as well. Now, what a difference a week makes. In last week's podcast, we said, I think in my little review of the game, I said there was going to be goals. I did say that, and there was. After the 21st minute, Neil, my son and I were loving the game, singing our hearts out to Glad All Over. You could probably hear me through the wall. By the final whistle, I was glad it was all over, unfortunately. We conceded goals far too easily. Before Saturday, we were 12 goals. 12 goals was all we conceded all season away from
home. Oh, really? I didn't know that.
That's a Premier League best, top of the stats table. 12 goals all season away from home. And then we go and let in five in one game. That is a little bit ridiculous. So, as you said, we got off to a good start. A couple of early chances from James McAtee. Daniel Munez exploited the space that the City defence gifted him, and they gifted him quite a bit of space during that game.
Yeah.
Eze looked like the Eze of last season, a real threat, ooze class. I thought he was at the top of his game, and I was actually quite excited in the early days.
Quick question on Eze.
Mm.
Do you reckon he listened to the podcast last week?
He probably wouldn't be listening to it again this week if he did.
Well, no, I just wondered because I didn't see him shoot too many times.
No, you're right. You're right. Well, he didn't do much in the second half, but the first half he did quite a bit. And as for the first goal, a long ball finds Munez in space. He passes it to Saar, who basically plays into a completely unmarked Eze at the far post. It was a really, really good goal, I think, in terms of well played. And our front line looked really dangerous.
Yeah.
It was one of them times as a fan, Neil, and I'm sure you've been here, because, you know, we've both been supporting kind of what would be deemed as mid-table clubs or whatever it would be. Yeah. And, you know, what, 1 week you lose horribly, the next week you pull off a big victory. And you sit there sometimes when you're playing these big teams and you're going, am I watching the right team? Like, it's one of them moments. We made Man City look vulnerable. We'd worked them out and they had some good spells and the majority of the possession in that first bit. But we stood firm. We were defending really, really well. And then came the second goal. 21 minutes gone. We get a corner taken by Wharton. Richard jumps up high and he gets ahead to it. And we're 2-0. 2-0 up. And do you know how many shots we had on target?
Go on.
Two. Two shots, two goals. Palace are flying high.
It was a shock for me as well, and my nephew. We were in the car driving to the Brighton game, listening to the radio broadcast. As we parked the car, you boys were 2-0 up, and we were trudging all the way to the terrace, to the fan zone, thinking, "Oh no, cannot stand this." And personally, I was thinking, "I cannot. I might just not do a podcast ever again." That's how I was feeling, anyway.
Well, we could have ended it on a high, couldn't we? Just done two podcasts.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then, you know, called it. However, De Bruyne curls a shot and hits the post. Close call. And it was a close call.
Yeah.
Then there should have been a third goal for Palace. I was getting even more excited. Kamada, of all people, setting up Sarr, but then he misses the target. And I could have scored that. And for those of you who know me, that is a statement.
That is a statement.
Thank you. 3 minutes later, another textbook counter-attack from Palace. Kamada's through ball to Eze, beautifully curled in from the edge of the area and ruled off by the first ever semi-automatic offside in the Premier League.
Yeah, I know.
Livid. It was a really good goal as well. When you do actually look at the new 3D images that came out, he was a little bit offside.
Absolutely.
Half of him was off. It wasn't just a toe. So there we go. So look at that. Palace are breaking the records again for another first, but being the first ones to be offside with the new system. And then once that happened, bearing in mind that technically for a few seconds we were 3-0 up until it got chalked off. Riding high.
Technically
3-0 up. I'm going to take that.
All right.
And
enough.
Here's, Neil, here is where it all changes for me. Kamada gets a yellow card after 30 minutes. And gives away a ridiculously stupid free kick just 30 yards out. He's so late. He just comes flying in. It's like one of them comedy moments. He should have some kind of comedy music playing along with it. Absolutely no need to make that tackle. Completely careless. And guess who comes back to haunt me? It's only episode 2 of the podcast.
Yeah.
It's happened already.
Yeah.
The man that I was saying had lost his spark last week, that was past it. Yes, it was a superb strike by Kevin De Bruyne. Even if the Palace wall was a little bit questionable, I'm not quite sure what our keeper was playing out there when he was orchestrating that.
It was interesting, wasn't it? Because actually when I looked at the replay afterwards, I saw it very quickly as I was at the Amex. But then when I looked at the replay, he's gone the keeper's side.
Yeah.
So the keeper's doing that thing that they always do, which is they're making a gamble that he's going to try and go over the wall. He's taken the step to the left. And it's just kissed the inside of the other post, I think, hasn't it? And gone in.
It's one of them ones where it shouldn't have happened. And I think, truthfully, it shouldn't have happened because Adam Wharton was directly where the ball should have, like, actually went through.
Yeah.
And when he jumped and turned sideways, which is, I think, one of them kind of natural reactions you do so you don't get a ball in your face. But if he hadn't gone sideways, he would have been banging the way of that. But anyway, there we go. That's what happened. This free kick goes in from 30 yards out. It was a really good free kick. Just 3 minutes later, the second goal went in from Marmoush. Now, at this point, it was no longer Man City versus Palace. It was actually Kevin De Bruyne versus Palace. Everything positive that came from City came through him, in my opinion. They were really had kind of picked up the pace. We were very lucky to get in at half-time with still a potential point in the bag.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the things that cheered me up was I parked the car. By the time I got to the terrace, it was 2-2. I mean, that that cheered me up no end, I have to be honest.
I bet it did.
Yeah.
I wasn't that happy. So then the second half comes, and I'm thinking to myself, what's going to happen here? Glasner changes the system at half-time to 3-5-2, as he wanted to control the middle and tighten things up, quote. He bought off Mateta, who, honestly, only had 5 touches in the first half when I looked at the stats.
Right, okay.
He was not having a good game. And actually, he actually got called out by the manager, which is very unlike Glasner. In the post-match thing, they asked why he bought Mateta off. And he basically said that he wasn't having a good game. And he kind of called him out for it a little bit, which was interesting because I've never seen him really do that before as a manager. So we brought on Will Hughes to support Walton. That was the idea. And this plan would really, truthfully, turn out to be quite a bad call. In fact, tactical suicide, to be true. Less than 80 seconds into the second half, City score. They then get their fourth in what can be described as a schoolboy error all round for Palace. So Edison launches this high ball that goes all the way to McAtee, right the way through our defence. Henderson fully commits himself to this, doesn't get there in time, and McAtee scores into an empty net. Now, Edison has scored, did you know this? He scored 4 assists this season from goal.
I know.
Mad. I think,
isn't that something like a record now as well? Isn't he the keeper with the most assists in the Premier League history, I think, now as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, it's like the joint most assists in a single season in the Premier League so far. Right. Yeah. And here you go. Here's an interesting stat. He's got more assists than McAllister, Gakpo, and even Matoma.
Wow. There you go. Pep Guardiola learning from Big Sam.
Absolutely. Edison did actually end up going off the pitch injured, which was really interesting because we were trying to work out what actually injured him. And then we went back and had a look, and he simply passed the ball to a defender 20 yards away and then went down like an absolute heap.
Oh, okay.
That's, really, really strange injury.
That's not a good sign, is it, really?
I wouldn't say so. I think he might be out for a while. Anyway, Neil, back to the game. We digress. We're now losing 4-2. No Mateta, no backup striker on the bench. Glasner does a double sub and brings on Chilwell and Klein. 2 defenders. Losing 4-2. Let's shore out the back, shall we? At this point, Neil, I'm like, what are we doing here? I did wonder whether we'd stop trying to win the game and we're actually trying to lose by less goals. I think that's kind of where Glasner's head might have been here with the FA Cup coming up and all the other bits and pieces, Newcastle this week. I feel like he was like, let's just not embarrass ourselves anymore here. Then it gets even worse. O'Reilly volleys into the far corner and then beats Henderson thanks to, I'm pretty sure it's Nathaniel Klein's bum, I think it comes off of. And then it's now 5-2. Deveni and Franca come on for Eze and Walton, and Walton had pretty much been played out the entire game for the second half. It looked like he was just kind of trying but not getting anywhere. And it looked like Eze was coming off because potentially he was injured. He kind of limped off the pitch. Haven't really heard anything about that since, so it'd be interesting to see what happens pre the Newcastle game. And then there was one more bit of controversy for me, which was there was a late penalty shout in the 93rd minute. I don't know if you saw it, when Lewis handled the ball in the box. Now, looking at the replay, he handled it with his left hand and then his right arm. So there was 2 touches with his hand or arm in the box, but the VAR team, I think they must have been on a break at the time or popped out for a fag or whatever it would have been. Unbelievable that was missed. And a definite penalty for me. However, it would have made absolutely no difference, but it would have made me feel better. So how did we lose? Truthfully, Mark Gaye, we missed him. Leader at the back, captain, normally calm under pressure. This is potentially what Palace could be like without Gaye at the back, if he's not there next season. I think we had a lot of people out missing from training this week. No excuses, they were the better team, but Lacroix, Chris Richards were both injured, only came back just before the game.
Yeah.
And I think, look, Man City found the gaps in the pockets and they worked us out. And Glasner's bit at the end of the game, he had a little chat with Pep. I don't know if you saw it right at the end.
Yeah.
And Glasner was like, yeah, you got us on there, but you won't work us out next time, was his last thoughts. So
it was a very interesting game, actually. I think tactically, that first half, there was so much going on from Palace's early, out the blocks, getting those 2 goals. And then something changed. And I think, you know, as a complete neutral watching that game, for me, the thing that changed the most, ironically, you know, it takes me back a little bit to last week's game, Brighton Palace game, because there was a similarity where Man City had all the ball, like Brighton did. Palace got the goals. You know, they were excellent this week, that first half. But what changed for me was Manchester City, suddenly their speed of thought and speed of pass and speed of foot went up four notches. You know, they changed gear, and everything they did double the speed that they were doing in that first 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And you could see it. They were at Palace. They did not stop running and chasing. When they had the ball, they were taking free kicks quickly. They were not letting Palace settle. And I think that was the opportunity. That's, you know, from my perspective, that's what made the difference. And they got a little lucky, you know, with the free kick, etc. But, you know, yes, it was a great free kick. But what I mean is, you know, you don't always expect to score those. So they got that first goal, and then it started, you know, they started moving. And Man City, when they're on a roll, sometimes are very difficult to stop.
So, to summarise, that game now moves Man City up to fourth.
Yep.
And Neil, where do you think Palace are now?
Oh, I'm going to take a wild stab in the dark, like I do every week, and I'm going to say 12th?
Yeah, sitting nice and comfortably where we feel at home in 12th position. So that was a roller coaster of an early game, and we hadn't even got to 3 o'clock yet on a Saturday.
No, absolutely. Cheers, Andy. That's a very thorough review. And yeah, very interesting that they ended up 12th position. Do we have to talk about Brighton?
Well, I'd love to find out how you ended up getting your two penalties and getting that little bit of help from VAR. So talk us through it, Neil.
Okay, I'm going to try my best. It's not been a great start to this podcast life for me as an Albion fan, I have to be honest. If I'd done it a month ago, it would have been great. You know, four straight wins, all that sort of thing. But there's a definite change at the moment from the way we're playing. Let's talk about the game then. Brighton v Leicester, 3 o'clock on the Saturday, as you said. Lineups wise, I think I touched on it last week. Like you, we also had a suspension in defence. So Van Hecker was suspended because of the Palace game sending off. We don't have any fit centre-backs apart from Aaron Cashin. And I wondered whether he would start. And I suggested last week that they might not do that. They might put Belaber in. And lo and behold, Belaber started at centre-back. And he's dropped in there a few times. He did it a little bit in pre-season and a couple of games here or there when we've had injuries for the last 10 minutes or something like that, he's done it. So it wasn't necessarily a huge surprise.
Also, though, you're only playing Leicester, though, aren't you? So it should be all right.
There you go. Yeah, let me get to that in a minute. So that was the main change because of Belaber being in midfield, being in centre-back, it meant a hole in midfield. Ayari's partner this time was Matt O'Riley, who dropped down from the 10 position of last week into centre midfield with João Pedro in the 10 and Welbeck up front. Otherwise, it was pretty much the same thing. Matoma was rested. I completely understand why he was rested. He had a bit of a knock on last Saturday. They're saying he's injured, but I fully expect him to be back next week. I think it was more of a resting because he'd played so many games. So Simon Adingra came in on that left wing. Now, the game. Oh, man.
Tell us about it, Neil. Come on, I'm waiting here with bated breath.
Well, okay. We started very brightly. I think we started as expected, full of energy, the high press, playing the way that we always play in that first sort of 10, 15 minutes. It was a lot of counter-pressing. It was a lot of keeping them in their own half. We had a lot of the ball because of that. And we created four or five in the first 25 minutes, four or five really good chances. Adingra had one. O'Riley had two. There were just, you know, we were cutting them open quite a few times and keeping the ball, and everything felt comfortable. However, we know as Brighton fans, there's the one thing that is a real problem for us, and that is the low block and the counter-attacking teams. It's not new. It's our nemesis.
This is painful to listen to, Neil. I feel like this is some kind of turn into therapy as opposed to a football podcast.
Yeah, I know. to run through the game, after that first 20, 25 minutes, as I say, we were sort of all over them. They hadn't really had a look in. We got to about 30 minutes, and the first thing that happened was a penalty to Brighton Hove Albion, as you alluded to earlier. There was a melee in the box. There was a shot from Simon Adingra, I think it was. And Connor Cody, well, basically saved the ball. I mean, there wasn't really much else I could say. I mean, it wasn't as obvious as that. But generally speaking, he went to stop the ball with his chest. It was clearly too far out, so he decided to put his arm out. And the thing that really gave it away, I think, for me, was the fact that he put his arm out, he made it solid and strong, it hit the arm, and then he went down pretending it had hit him in the chest. I don't know if you... It just made me chuckle a little bit. It's like, you realise that there's cameras, Connor, yeah? You realise this is going to be looked at.
But talking of cameras, though, like, so it was that obvious, and he basically did a goalkeeper save. It still went to VAR.
So this is my soapbox, okay? So I've got two things to talk about, and I'll get to that in a second, okay. Because of the two penalties, right? So it goes to VAR. Game plays on, because the referee says play on. And then when the ball goes out, finally, after about 20 seconds, the referee stops the game, obviously, and says, hang on. Does his usual charades moment, and then runs over to the screen. Where I sit on the upper west stand, I'm about five rows back from the TV commentary. The good news for that is that I can see what the VAR are looking at. I can see all the replays and everything. So I'm lucky in that sense. So I'm looking at the screen and everyone around me is going, how did he not see that first time? How did the referee not see that first time? This is definitely going to be a penalty. So we're all just sitting there going, yeah, just hurry up. It still takes a minute and a half for the referee to decide that it's a penalty. I honestly don't know why it took that long. You look at it once, you go, oh yeah, it's hit his arm. He's tried to stop it with his arm. Let's just move on. Finally get the penalty. João Pedro scores. He always scores pretty much. I mean, he's excellent at penalties. So we go in front. And then we all know what happens. We get really confident. We try to attack. We try to get the second goal. Absolutely right thing to do. However, the counter-attacking team that Leicester decided to be that day meant that because we were pushing up so high, I think Dunk was pushed up into midfield because Vardy pulled right up into midfield. He missed the ball, Dunk, and they started a counter-attack. Everyone's running back. There's only Baleba and Jack Hinshelwood trying to sprint back. Mavadidi essentially gets it in the back of the net after a deflection as well. I mean, it was a bit of a mess, and it was a very frustrating goal to see, but it's one, well, we've seen this movie quite a few times now. So that was the end of the first half. First half that we were scratching our heads going, how did we miss so many chances? How are we 1-1? I'll be honest with you, you know, and if you looked at social media the week up to the game, there was all these stats that Sky Sports and everyone were saying about how long it's been since Leicester scored a goal. We all knew Leicester were going to score against us. That wasn't a problem. We always make sure that, you know, we do our work for charity every so often. So
I think if you want the answer to that, it was 13 hours worth of football is the answer.
Yeah. And Brighton Hove Albion then said, hang on, hold my beer. You know, and you know, they always help the little guy out.
Yeah.
It's always the same. Second half comes around. And to be fair, Albion came out. They'd obviously had a good chat with the manager. They put the pressure on that first 15 minutes. We got another pen. Now, this penalty, I was listening to, I was watching Match of the Day, and they seemed to say it was not such a definite penalty. There was a mixed view. Generally speaking, I think they thought it was a bit of a harsh penalty. Okay. But what happened was, I think it was Estupiñán crossed the ball over, and the ball went over to the far back right-hand side of the penalty box where Matt O'Riley collected the ball just about. It bobbled around a little bit. Luke Thomas, the left back, was with him and jostling with him. But Luke Thomas clearly grabbed his shirt and pulled him around to pull him over so that he could get the ball and run away with it. So let me just say that again. He pulled his shirt. He pulled his shirt so much that you could see skin. You could see the back. Half of his back, Matt O'Riley's back. So the shirt was way up, right? Matt O'Riley's turning around. The whole of the stadium is turning around going, what are we doing? Are we allowing this sort of thing? Referee says play on.
Oh.
And it goes another minute or so. Finally, the ball goes out. And yet again, the same thing happens. VAR get involved and they look at it and they ask the referee to go to the screen. My issue with this, the penalty was given. We did score. We went 2-0 up. My issue with this was this particular referee, and I will name and shame.
Oh, actually getting named.
I am gonna name and shame the referee. Yeah. So Darren Bond. Okay. I've not seen a referee so scared to make a decision. It was as if he didn't want to make a mistake. And that's what it felt like the whole game, which is a problem, I think. And I think it's a problem because of the way that VAR have changed their rules this season, in that they are mostly now been told that unless it is an ultimately clear and obvious mistake, they should go with the referee's decision on the pitch.
Yeah.
So if you're going with the referee's decision on the pitch and the referee is scared to make a decision, we're all in trouble. And it really felt like that. And, it's a concern. I've not seen that before. And two really clear, obvious penalties. And both times the referee said play on because he was waiting for VAR to have a look for him. And you know, it felt wrong. It felt a little bit out of character, to be fair, to the other referees. But that one was a problem. So, yes, I'm naming and shaming. Darren Bond, come on, man. Step it up.
Don't worry, Darren. It's going to be all right.
So we go 2-1 up. Life is good, and I'm starting to think, okay, this is good. We've had a rollicking at half time. We're going to go through this, and we're going to score another couple now. Game's going to be over. I can get my beer, and we can go home.
It's Leicester, right?
Exactly.
Win. Everyone beats Leicester.
And then Leicester get a free kick in the right hand side of the pitch, and they swoop it over. It was a good free kick, to be fair, curling, you know, in that little alleyway of uncertainty between the defensive line and the goalkeeper. They score, and I think that was, I'm trying to remember what time of the match that was. I think it was about 70-odd minutes, 75 minutes, something like that. And at that point, we're like, we just can't believe that they've scored, but we've still got time to change.
Yeah.
And this is where then the problem for me came in. You could see at that moment the immaturity of the squad, I think. The players, they looked empty of ideas, I would say. They, more than that, they looked scared to make a mistake. That was the other thing. And it just, the air got toxic a little bit near me. I think there were a lot of people shouting and really frustrated. And I can understand their frustration, but shouting and, you know, obscenities and having a go at individual players is not going to be conducive to them, especially these very young players that we've got, you know, conducive of them being creative and trying to come up with something. And it just stifled, I think. I'm not blaming the fans, but I think it didn't help is my point.
I agree, Neil, because I think that the I was listening to it actually, and I could hear it on the commentary. The fans turned on their own players, and I'm sure it wasn't the whole stadium or anything like that. But I think it's yes, you know, you're drawing with Leicester. However, you are actually having a pretty good season. You've come off the back of a good run, and it's amazing how the fans change their perception of what good looks like very, very quickly.
Oh, absolutely.
And I thought it was a bit harsh and a bit counterproductive of your fans with time to go, weren't helping the players on the pitch.
Yeah, and I think I understand the frustration. I have it too. Mm. And I think to quantify the frustration, I think, let me tell you this. So this season, Brighton have currently played 7 of the 8 fixtures against the bottom 4 teams. So we've only got Wolves to go. We've played 7 games against the bottom 4. We have won 2. Yes, we have lost none, but we have won 2. So drawn 5. So just let that sink in for a minute. All of those points, yeah, all of those points that we could have had, we've only got Wolves left. So if we can get that, that's great. That'll take us up to a mighty 14 points out of a 24. But still, even if we do that, dropped 10 points against possibly the worst bottom 3 teams to come up for a long time, especially Southampton. Come on.
Mate, it's funny you should say that, because I'd written that you haven't beaten Ipswich, Southampton or Leicester at home. I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it? It's like you, when the team starts on a run, you kind of, I'm a little bit more optimistic sometimes about the teams higher up the league than the teams lower down. Yeah. You feel like you're going to get more out of it. Is it a mindset thing? What do you think it is, Neil?
I think it's a mixture of things. And I think Fabian Hertzler knows some of the issues. And I'll talk about that in a second because he made some really interesting quotes this week. To be fair to Fabian Hertzler, he's always very honest. And he has been all season. And I like that about him. His quotes. This is word for word. "It was not a mature performance. We were too naive. We didn't act like we should. We didn't deserve more. It's not about the chances. It's about defending and not conceding a goal and doing the basics right. Today, we weren't able to do the basics right and were not able to win the game." And then he says, "We weren't able to deal with the second goal we conceded, and that's something we can't accept." And what he means by that is, mentally, you could see it. When the second goal went in, they didn't know what to do. They couldn't accept the fact that they'd equalised. He says, "We were not mature enough. We were too naive." So he doubles down on that. And then says, "And we need to move on. The season is not over yet. We have to show a reaction because this cannot continue," he said.
Oof.
There's quite strong words, I think.
Really strong words from a manager, actually.
Yeah, I thought it was quite interesting that. And he's clearly a good leader, but it was an interesting comment.
I mean, Neil, he's the youngest manager in Premier League history, right? I want to say he's 32, I think, now, which is, what, 3 years younger than our club captain, who's still playing, Joel Ward,
yep.
Right? So do you reckon that he's still your man? He's still the right man for the job? Or do you reckon that because of his age, he kind of lacks the knowledge and experience?
Look, as I said, he's clearly a good leader, okay? He's embedded well, I think, into Albion generally as a club. I think he fits what they're looking for. Certainly Tony Bloom was happy with his choice, otherwise he wouldn't make it. I have trust in Tony 100%. I don't know why I'm calling him Tony. It's like he's my mate. It feels like it, you know? We call him Uncle Tony.
We'll pretend he is your friend.
Thank you. The players clearly like him. I think it's clear he's talented. But he is inexperienced. However much we want to pretend that, you know, he says, but I've been managing for, five, six, seven seasons. Clearly, though, he's not as experienced as other managers. We have to give him time, from my point of view. I think it's still really early in his tenure. There are a few voices that are now shouting for his head from time to time that I hear and other people talking when I'm at the club.
That's harsh.
I agree. I don't think that's a sensible option. I think there are lots of young players in that squad, huge amount. We've been unlucky as well, I think, through the season. A lot of our experienced players have been injured, which has left the more younger ones and inexperienced ones to really fend for themselves. Some of them have flourished, but I'm still saying it's not helpful from that point of view. You've got to remember also at the beginning of the season, not just Fabian turned up, but a handful of very new young players as well. A lot of our squad has changed. Mm-hmm. So I think, we have to give him time. If we don't get European football, and this is me talking personally, I don't see it as the end of the world. We understand where we've come from as a club. And yes, of course, our perspective has changed slightly and we always want to progress. But as a first year, first season, I don't think this has been that bad. I think we're doing okay. And, all I want to see is development. I want to see Fabian Hertzler learning from his mistakes. I want to see the club and the team learning from their mistakes.
Leicester got a point off you.
Leicester seem to always want to get a point off us. Let's just move off this subject now, please.
Okay, you don't want to talk about it anymore?
No.
We're good.
Okay.
Okay, well, in that case then, with Neil in absolute misery, we'll try and cheer things up. We'll be back very shortly.
Welcome back. This is Seagull Eagle Podcast. Right, what are we going to do now? Oh, let's have a bit of fun, shall we?
Yes, I've been looking forward to this.
So this is our very new little section, and we like to call it Very Anonymous Recruit. Each week, we'll take it in turns to guess a mystery footballer from our club using the given clues. This week, Andy, it's your turn to play. Right, okay, I've got five clues about a current player in your Crystal Palace squad, okay? But just like a tough away day at Turf Moor, it won't be easy at first. So you've got clue one, deep in your own half, a tricky one for the real footballing tacticians. Clue two pushes into midfield, still cagey, but starting to open up. Clue three is a clever through ball, now you're seeing the shape. Clue four is a one-on-one, get this right and you're in. And then clue five, well, that's a tap-in at the far post, I suppose. And you're still guessing by now, then there's no hope. Right, so Andy, are you ready for this?
I'm born ready, Neil. I'm born ready.
Okay, so the question is, Andy, can you identify the very anonymous recruit before the final whistle? Here we go. Let's play VAR. Clue one. This player was born on September the 1st, 1999.
Is that it?
That's it.
Cheers. Right, okay. So we're looking for a player who's about, 26?
Your maths is amazing.
Thank you so much. It was quite an easy one to work out on that. About 26. Okay, so, I mean, we're in the realms of who's that, around that kind of age, kind of Mateta and Ketia, Saar. Well, I've got a guess, and let's go Nketiah. Oh, sound effects as well.
Do you
this
like
is,
that?
This I, is I, high budget entertainment.
If I'm honest, I hadn't actually worked out what sound I was going to make. I'm glad that sound came
out. Okay, good.
Okay, clue number two then. He joined the Palace Academy from Brentford in 2016.
Oh, okay. So we're looking for an academy player who's around the 26 mark from Brentford. I don't know if I'd know that they came from Brentford if they came through the academy, though. Okay, Neil, let's go for the next one.
Okay.
It's not going well.
Okay, here we go. He set the record for the youngest ever player to make 100 Premier League appearances for the club.
100 Premier League appearances for the club, the youngest player.
Come on, you must get this one.
100 appearances, we're talking, it was not Mateta.
Come on, give me something. Give me one name or something.
Okay, Give me one more clue. Give me one more clue and I'm going to get it.
All right.
I've got an inkling. Go on, give me one more clue.
His performances throughout 21-22 season saw him earn a senior England call-up for his first time in March 2022.
Got it.
Oh, have you? Mm. Okay, well, I was going to say, making his debut in a 2-1 win over Switzerland. Who is it?
I'm a bit ashamed of myself, actually, because now you've said that. I mean, when you're talking about England call-ups, it's only a few select people now.
Exactly.
It's Mitchell.
Correct. Yeah. Well done, Tariq Mitchell.
Didn't know he came from Brentford, though, to be fair, from the academy. So there you go.
Just as a point of completion, let's give you the last clue for anyone else listening out there. I was going to say he's the Palace number 3 shirt. You can see how obvious this one's going. And he's gone from left back to left wing back under Glasner. So
yeah, I'm glad we didn't get to that point in
that
this quiz.
That would have been pretty embarrassing.
I might have to retire. There we go. Tariq Mitchell, what a player. What a man.
He's all right. And that was Very Anonymous Recruit.
Right, Neil, let's have a look at a roundup of some of the other results in the Premier League this week. Should we start with a bit of Forest Everton?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, this is an interesting one because Everton fans were heard chanting, "Champions League, you're having a laugh," as a 94th minute winner dealt a blow to Nottingham Forest Champions League hopes. I didn't see this one coming. Bearing in mind, in last week's podcast, I was calling Everton the draw specialists, and they specialise in draws or 1-0 wins or losses is pretty much what's been going on here. This game, I wouldn't say it was anything to watch more than once. It was definitely a slow burner, and it was definitely looking like it was heading for a goalless draw until Decore scored a late winner with seconds to go. Forest lacked their normal pace and power going forward, and was second best, actually, for most of the game, believe it or not. Mm. Chris Woods was back from injury and Elanga only made the bench. And they, well, let's be honest, they lacked their normal kind of zip and flair and all that exciting stuff that you personally were talking about last week. Back-to-back defeats at the hands of Villa and Everton leave them under pressure now, with, I think, Villa and City now in touching distance of them. It could all go all the way to the last day, but I think we'll probably talk about that next week. For Everton, and Dai, Harrison and Decore put in strong displays. I think they're now on 38 points, 18 clear from the bottom three. And Everton have only lost two league matches under Moyes. Can you believe that? He's doing such a good job. An average of 1.6 points per game, compared to 0.9 under Dyche.
Really,
so
that's
quite a turnaround, right?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about him last week, didn't we? And said that he's just such a steady Eddie. David Moyes gets them firing, works in so well. I mean, it was really good. I think my only take on that game really was Forest, like a lot of teams, I think, at the moment, when I mentioned Brighton earlier, they look a little bit tired, which is interesting with a FA Cup semi-final coming up. The only other thing I probably thought about was the fact that, you know, Everton played them at their own game, and it was literally the last seconds of the game, wasn't it? Or injury time, I think it was, or very close to it.
94th minute.
94th, was it that late? Oh, yeah. I didn't realise it was that late. I mean, the thing that I loved about it was the fact that, you know, it was Nottingham Forest corner, and they then go up the other end counter-attacking against the counter-attackers.
Yeah.
So I did enjoy that moment a little bit, I have to be honest. I love a little bit of schadenfreude. Okay, yeah, let's move on from that one. That was an interesting game, though, and Forest does leave them a little bit looking behind them now, doesn't it?
Mm.
Some of the other games on Saturday, we saw Arsenal play Brentford. It was a 1-1 draw, wasn't it?
Yep.
I wasn't going to really talk about that too much. I think it was one team in Arsenal that made quite a few changes. Obviously, they've got a bigger game for their point of view on Wednesday. It's clear that I think they know where their eggs are now. They're all in one particular basket, and that's a Champions League-shaped one. And Brentford doing Brentford things, really, making it difficult for the other team, never giving up, and horrendously quick on the counter-attack. Johan Wisser, I have to say, I've got a little soft spot for him. You know, he's such a good little player.
He's great.
Oh, he's... And I mean, this season, him and Wemo, I think they've scored double figures, both of them now. And do they really care that they don't have what they call a big number nine anymore? I mean, it seems to be these two most of the time. I know Sharda's there. Sharda? I know it's not a singer, anyway. But yeah, I think they've done really well. But yeah, it was a bit of a strange game in some respects, because I think Arsenal were very much looking to another game this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Points lost for Arsenal there, but yeah, 1-1 draw. So we move on to Southampton and Villa. 3-0 win for Villa over Southampton. Southampton's sole aim was now to be relegated with dignity. We talked about this last week, and not to be crowned the worst ever team in the Premier League. And this game probably did them no favours in that respect. However, they arguably had the better chances early on, until Watkins and Malen came on and changed the game. They were superb. From this point, Southampton couldn't really find their way out of their own penalty box for the rest of the game, from what I saw it. There were... not one, but two penalty misses.
Oh,
did you see this?
That was my favourite moment of the game, I think. I always look for the interesting parts of the weekend and the little things that are always different. Last week we were talking about a goal line wall of 11 players, and this week we're talking about two penalties missed in the same game by the same player.
Yeah, and rumour has it that... obviously, they've got various different penalty takers.
Right.
And some of the other people that normally take the penalties, the other players, had already been subbed off by that point. But obviously, the lad wanted to right his wrongs. So the other players were like, yeah, go for it. You know, take the second one, right your wrongs. And he just made a bigger wrong. It was a calamity of errors. What is interesting, though, is here's an interesting stat for you. Villa are the first team in Premier League history to have three different substitutes score for them in a single game.
Wow.
It's interesting. So all three goals from Villa were from substitutes. So Watkins, Malen and McGinn all came on as subs.
Wow. The
result means 5 wins in 6 games for Villa, on track for a top five finish. And Southampton have now lost 26 of their last 32 Premier League games, which is interesting. And a new club record, a record they wouldn't want to be breaking. 13 home defeats. We were just saying about how miserable it is to be a Brighton fan with a season ticket right now. Imagine being a Southampton fan. 13 home defeats. That's pretty miserable.
There's always someone worse off than you, Andy. You should always remember that.
Absolutely.
Thankfully, it's nearly always Southampton.
There you go.
Sunday.
Chelsea-Ipswich. 2-2 draw.
Yep.
I didn't see this one coming. I really didn't. Chelsea started strong, but it was Ipswich who took the lead with Enciso. He then provided...
Excuse me. Brighton of Albion's Julio Enciso, I think you'll have to call him.
Is he still Brighton?
Yes, he's just on loan. We're just giving him some minutes so that he can come back and...
He's not wearing a Brighton shirt.
Win the Ballon d'Or like he always tries to do every year. So
okay, all right. He then provided a superb chip into the back post for Johnson to score his first goal of the season. Ipswich 2-0 up at Stamford Bridge. Surely not. Well, actually, Neil, they actually scored a third, didn't they?
Yeah.
However, it was in their own net. Substitute Sancho scored a very clever curler to get them the draw. But look, Alex Palmer was my player of the match, making three vital saves to keep Ipswich in the game. Do you know what? Here's an interesting one for Chelsea fans.
Yeah.
Ipswich have taken 4 points off Chelsea this season.
Yeah.
Which is just a wonderful, wonderful thing. They're 14 points adrift of safety with six matches to go. I think it's too little too late for Ipswich. They're certainly not going to go down without a fight, and that's what they've showed in this game. Wouldn't it be lovely if they did do the great escape?
I mean, they've played well all season, in my opinion. They're good to watch. I always feel like there's always a team in the bottom three that near the end of the season show a little bit of fight, get a few good results, and it gives that horrible thing, that horrible word, hope, to supporters, you know.
That's what it's all about, though, Neil. And it's boring. It's boring if the bottom three just go down.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you. I think they do have a small outside chance. I can't see it happening, but yeah. Essentially, I agree with you that there's a chance. And it's just nice to see them having some joy when they go and play football, especially for the fans. What I would also just like to say is I agree with you that it's nice to see Chelsea suffer a little bit. I think Brighton fans will probably back me up on the fact that there is definitely no love lost with Chelsea anymore over the last few seasons. I think it's something like 11 people and, I think it's 11 people, it's like three players, eight staff that Chelsea have taken from us over the last few seasons.
I think they've paid you handsomely for quite a lot of them. And they kept you in business.
Don't get me wrong, Tony saw them coming. Don't get me wrong. But my point being that it did leave us in some horrible situations at times. So, there's quite a few Brighton fans out there that always have a little eye on the Chelsea result. And when they see results like this, there's a little smirk in there.
Mm.
What other games did we have on the weekend? So we had Newcastle Man United, didn't we?
Yeah, now this was another interesting one. Newcastle moved up to the fourth spot, just a point behind Forest, with what can be described as quite an impressive win, actually, yeah. I believe, over Man U. Newcastle recorded their first league double over Man United since 1930.
Really?
Yeah.
Blimey, everyone's beating them these days. How come Newcastle had to wait so long?
Well, yeah, they're getting into practice now, aren't they? Obviously, Eddie Howe in hospital, we've since found out it's pneumonia.
Yeah.
Poor guy. We wish him a speedy recovery. Absolutely. Sounds like he's on the mend now, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. No, I wish him well.
So, obviously, Jason Tindall and Graham Jones took charge. The team absolutely, in my eyes, dismantled Man United, continuing their four-game unbeaten run. They're on fire at the moment, genuinely are on fire. On track for Champions League spot, attacking players have been on fire. My only issue with all of this, Neil, my only issue is they got Palace next. Not a great time to come off of our loss and meet Newcastle. Bearing in mind, this is a rearranged fixture from when they weren't doing quite so well. It would have been a better time to have played them. As for Man United, well, look, they fought back well after going behind with a solid goal from Garnacho. It was actually a decent goal.
It was, yeah.
Then it all went a bit wrong for them. They are, get this.
Go on.
Get this. they're not actually, this is Man United, they're not actually mathematically safe yet as we speak from relegation. Now, listen, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I mean, I'd love it to. I'm not saying it's going to happen. But with six games left of the season, Man United are not mathematically safe. There's a 17-point gap between them and Ipswich. And it just shows for me how far they've fallen from grace. We all know they've fallen from grace. And for some unknown reason, Amrin has been given kind of a little bit more time than everybody else, a little bit more space. We won't get into this because this is a banned subject talking about Man United.
I was just about to say, Andy, remember, you're almost on the threshold now of talking too much about a Big Six team.
Well, yeah, just one more thing, right? Because I don't mind talking about a Six team if we're bashing them, right?
Fair point.
And they've had 14 league defeats this season, right, which is the same as they had last year, but we still got six games to go. Three other teams have done the double over them this season. Nottingham Forest, Tottenham and...
Brighton Hove Albion?
Yeah, there you go. I thought you might want me to do that stat.
Yeah, easy 3 points. So just to recap then, from a league positions point of view, that leaves Crystal Palace 12th, you said?
Yeah.
And it leaves Brighton Hove Albion on 48 points in 10th. So ultimately, Crystal Palace 43 points, Brighton 48 points. You know, when we're thinking about the European spots, we've probably got to look at 7th, 8th position possibly is a European spot. And currently, that's Bournemouth and Fulham and Brighton, Brentford, Palace. They're all in it at the moment, aren't they?
Oh, look, listen, I'm all for the facts. And, you know, for me, what I've taken from today is that mathematically, Palace can end up in Europe, and mathematically, Man United will be in the Championship next year. That's my take from what we've just heard. Shall we move on, Neil?
Let's.
It's now time for this. Swooping Statement of the Week. Welcome to Swooping Statements, where we dive into the bold, the unpopular, and the controversial opinions about our beloved clubs. In this feature, we'll challenge the status quo and take a hard look at the takes that might ruffle some feathers. Whether it's a hot take about tactics, player performances, or even club management, we're not afraid to stir the pot and have some tough conversations. This week, it's Neil's turn to give us his swooping statement. Neil, over to you.
Cheers, Andy. So after 432 appearances over a 15-year career, all at Brighton Hove Albion, by the way, this week's swooping statement is about our leader, our captain, our legend, Lewis Carl Dunk.
Surely you're going to be kind.
I think it's time that Albion move on from Lewis Dunk. Look.
Okay.
Let me be very clear here. I am not dismissing the history of Lewis Dunk. As I said already, he's our legend. He's our captain. He has been, quite simply, one of the greatest ever players to play for this club. And I love him. However, he's never been quick, but he is starting to show signs that he's getting even slower. He's had a few injuries over the last couple of seasons that have made him miss more games than normal, let's say. As I alluded to earlier when I was talking about Fabian Hursler and the style of play that he wants, we need centre-backs, central defenders that are quick, or at least quicker than Lewis Dunk.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real problem with the current style that we want to play. The other thing to consider is there are some stats that back up that maybe we should move on from him because of the way we've played this season. If you think about the fact that for the past 7 seasons in the Premier League, he has been pretty much an ever-present. This season, though, he has missed, I think, if we talk about league games, he's missed 10 through injury. If you think about who we've got in reserve currently, it's left Jean-Paul Van Hek, who is proving to be an excellent central defender. There's a lot of clubs looking to see if they can purchase him, I think, in the summer.
He's doing all right, to be fair.
He is. When Dunk has not played, that has left Van Hekker to very much take over the mantle of the leader at the back, with either Adam Webster or Igor to play alongside him. Now, if you look at all the games this season where Igor or Webster have played alongside JP, as I like to call him. We have played 14 games in all competitions. We've won 7 of them. We've drawn 5 of them. We've only lost twice when Dunk hasn't played. And it does show, because we have played some big teams. Yes, we've played some smaller teams. One of the games was against Norwich in the FA Cup, absolutely. But stats are stats. He is a fantastic leader. Don't get me wrong. And he's a great voice on the pitch. I understand that. But Saturday, watching him play in the style that Fabian Hürsler wants us to play, and over the last few games, watching him play against teams that have absolute engines running past them, it's starting to show a little bit. You know, if you think about all the games that Lewis Dunk has played in this season, we've lost 7 times in 17 games in the league. Compare that to the other two, as I said, you know, it's a big difference. It's not all about Lewis Dunk. It's not his fault. But this statement is about Lewis Dunk. And just simply, I want to say, is it time to move on? I think so. I think as of next season, we should be playing 2 centre-backs that are slightly younger, slightly fitter, and slightly quicker. Personally, for me, of the current list of centre-backs that we have, JP, 100%. Hopefully he stays here for a very long time. Personally, I would take then Igor and play him. He's a naturally left-sided footballer, so it helps us as well from that point of view. And he used to play as a midfielder, so he's very good on the ball. That, to me, would be our starting 2 for next season. But obviously, transfers and other things might happen before then. But as of now, I think it's time to move on from Lewis Dunk. Say goodbye. Give him a swan song over the next few games that we've got left at the end of the season. But ultimately, we need to change our centre-back style. And unfortunately for Lewis Dunk, he simply doesn't fit that mould. Fabian, it's time.
Oh, yes!
Right, let's move on to our next segment, which is Winging It, the feature where we fly straight into the week's biggest matches ahead for Brighton and Hove Albion and Crystal Palace. We'll break down the upcoming games for both clubs, offering predictions, key players to watch, and what could make the difference in these vital clashes. Whether it's the Seagulls soaring to new heights or the Eagles hoping to swoop in for a win, we've got you covered with all the details and insights you need to stay ahead of the game. So, Neil, do you want to start with the Brighton game? Who have you got this week?
No, I don't want to start with the Brighton game. I'm still depressed. Let's start with the Newcastle Palace game, especially as it's midweek, isn't it?
It is, actually. It's on Wednesday night. And I think it's going to be a tough one. We've already had a little chat about Newcastle. It's not the type of game you want to be having right now. However, look, the last time we met them, it was a 1-1 draw in November. As I said, this game is, yeah, it's a tricky one. I think confidence was knocked at the weekend and Newcastle are on form. They're on a 4-game unbeaten run, and Palace's stats are now a little bit less good than they were before. We've got 3 wins in 5. I think we're going to have Gehi back after suspension, which will help us a lot, genuinely. And Nketiah's back probably on the bench for a start after suspension too. We've got Eze, who I'm hoping he's going to be right after that knock. And apart from that, I think we'll probably be unchanged, just maybe hopefully not a start for Kamada. In terms of Newcastle, I think Lewis Hall and Botman, are out until the end of May. And I think Anthony Gordon's back in contention after he started at the weekend. I'm going to be optimistic and go for a 2-2 draw.
Are you? Interesting. Mm. That's very optimistic.
Yeah. I'm the optimist.
Yeah, no, hey, look, they're your team. I get it. I mean, looking at the way Newcastle are playing at the moment, I mean, ever since they've won the cup, you can just see they're just so relaxed now. They're just going for it game for game. And the way they dismantled Manchester United, yes, I appreciate they're a relegation threatened club, but they, you know, Newcastle looked very good. And I expect them to go full throttle, especially the fact that it's at St. James's. Personally, yeah, I think Newcastle will win that one. But we'll see.
I think you might be right, Neil. No, 2-2 is what's going
to
happen.
Stick to your guns, mate. Stick to your guns. Yeah, so Brighton on the weekend.
How many penalties are you going to get this week?
Oh, let's hope 3. Hat-trick for João Pedro. Yeah, so we've got Brentford away. Both teams, going into this with exactly the same form in the last 3 games. You know, 1 win, 2 draws, 2 losses. When we played them, I think it was around Christmas time, it was a 0-0 bore draw. I mean, it was a horrific game, really. Both teams didn't want to be there. They do have a tendency to nullify each other. Both teams have got an outside chance of Europe, as we've already discussed. They're in the mixer now. I think from a points point of view between the two clubs, I think we're only, 2 points, 3 points? What is it? 5 points difference. So this could be a big spot for Brentford, couldn't it? There's, as I said, look, no real form going into it, but Brentford are always really strong at home. They're always, you know, going for it. They've got some really good players. I know that Albion really need this. They really need a win. But I've still got this horrible feeling from Saturday still stuck in me at the moment. And looking at how tired the players were, they need a reaction. And Fabian Hursler needs to do something to snap them out of it. And I don't know what that will be, but hopefully, you know, he'll bring a couple of players back. We might get lucky. I think from a lineup point of view, obviously we'll have Jean-Paul Van Hecker back, which is fantastic news for us. It'll be, hopefully, Karu Mitoma back as well. And, you know, having those two back in the team will make a huge amount of difference. So, you know, from my point of view, we need the win. Personally, I think it'll probably be a draw. I'm just fearing a loss. I really am, because then I know the season's over. I think, you know, one more loss, and I think that's definitely it. At the moment, we're clinging on by our fingernails. So, yeah, for me, I'm going to go with a draw, but obviously hoping a win.
I think it'll be again, I'm going for 2-2 on that one from my perspective, because I think you're both struggling at the moment for form.
Yeah.
I think by the time we speak next, Neil, on this podcast, genuinely, I think a lot's going to have changed, specifically for Palace, actually, two games under the belt by the time we have this podcast next. Whatever happens at Newcastle is obviously, I believe, going to strongly affect what happens at Bournemouth next Saturday. It's Bournemouth Palace on Saturday. I mean, it's really hard to predict the game after the next one in this occasion. I think, obviously, as we speak on a Monday evening, as it is now, Bournemouth are playing Fulham tonight.
Yep.
So, again, I think that's going to be an interesting one, as we said earlier, to see what happens there. Bournemouth are sat 18th in the form guide at the moment, right? 3 losses and 2 draws in 6. So you would, unless, of course, they find their form tonight and get a spring in their step, I would definitely say that Palace would be on that. Neil, have you got an update on the score there as we speak?
Well, as we're recording, it's half-time. Bournemouth currently 1-0. Oh. By the time you guys listen to this, you'll know what's happened. So we may make a complete arse of ourselves. But I think we both are sitting here thinking, please, Bournemouth, win this one, because it brings everyone so much closer, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. But I don't want them to find their form before they play us. So there we go. A couple of interesting games. Let's see whether we're laughing or crying next time we speak.
Right, that's the end of that, I think, for this week. I think we've talked more than enough about everything that's gone on. Next week's episode, we're going to be reviewing the Seagulls and Eagles performance. Plus, as I said earlier, we're going to start looking at the remaining fixtures for all the clubs with the European aspirations and maybe try and work out who we think are going to be successful and finish in the European spots.
Absolutely. So that wraps up episode 2. Of the Seagull Eagle podcast. Thanks for flying with us as we swooped through the highs, the lows, and everything in between. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your fellow fans, blue and white or red and blue. We'll be back next week with much more match chat, hot takes, and the kind of football talk you won't hear in the mainstream media. Until then, stay loud, stay proud, and remember, rivalry never dies, it just evolves. Catch you next time on Eagle Seagull.
Seagull!
Eagles!